Greetings this morning in the name of Jesus. I can truly say it's a blessing, a privilege to be here. My family's been after me to come sometime and visit, and so I thought maybe I'd do that, but they didn't tell me that would include preaching. So when I started out Friday, I didn't really have that in mind, but Brother Ralph changed my mind on the while I was traveling, so here I am. we want to share a few things here this morning. As I'm sure all of you are aware, there's been a lot of changes in my life and many of our lives in the last number of months. And I've found that, I don't know, maybe people kind of get tired of it, but I found that it affects my preaching. You know, some of the things that go through my mind that I have to, that kind of come out, I guess, in some of the things I have to say. And you'll notice that this morning, I'm sure. But in the last year, less than a year, in our congregation, we've had four deaths. And three of those have had a direct impact on this congregation here. And that somewhat brings me to message this morning. There's a question that we would like to explore, and we find this in Proverbs 27, verse 24. And the question is this: doth the crown endure to every generation? And the purpose of the message this morning, in my mind, is to encourage each one of us in whatever stage of life we are to be faithful, to look backward, to look forward, to think about oncoming generations. And maybe the youth think this isn't for you, but it's especially for you, which I'll try to elaborate on a little bit later. But since the passing of my father-in-law at 96 years of age, about 6 weeks ago, this question has gone around and around in my mind, and it seems like I haven't been able to get to shake it. Doth the crown endure to every generation? I guess I could just simply answer that question and sit down. The answer is no. It doesn't. Or it may not. But it should. And so, with the passing of my father-in-law, Brother Richard Culp, and with all four, actually, of the deaths in our congregation, there is a sense where there is a passing of a generation. And so, as I think of a man that was 96 years old, and he passes on, there's another generation that takes his place. And then there's a generation following that is in the midst of life's works and challenges and striving to win the crown. And then there's a generation following that yet that is in the place of making choices in life. That's going to determine if the crown is going to endure to your generation and to generations beyond. I guess one reason that this question came to my mind so vividly, I thought about it about 23 years ago. The Culp family gathered together in Indiana to commemorate the 50th anniversary of Richard and Mary Culp, my wife's parents. That Sunday that we were there, they kind of had the same custom that you have here, that if there's a visiting preacher, you ask him to preach. And so I was asked to speak, and so I spoke on this text. And actually, that was the second time I had spoken on this text, because 2 years prior to that, many of you would know them, some of you would not. But Marvin and Agnes Schrock in our congregation there at Tangent were celebrating their 50th, 25 years ago. And so I had spoke on this subject. And so this morning, with a backward look and with a forward look, we want to see what this question has to say to us, and hopefully it can be a challenge for us to strive to win the crown, and that crown would not be lost, and that crown might be something that we keep foremost in our minds. And so first of all, I'd like to think a little bit about a generation. That's the last word of our text phrase, generation. What is a generation, and how long is it? My dictionary at home says that a generation is a group of individuals born and living contemporaneously, or in other words, during the same time frame. It also says that a generation is the average span of time between the birth of parents and their offspring. Now, the Vines Bible Dictionary would say it's roughly the period of time from one's birth to maturity. And in Bible times, often 40 years was maybe considered to be a generation. But with these definitions of a generation, I believe we can say that a generation has passed since I spoke on this at Tangent 25 years ago. And one reason I feel free, I guess, to go into some of this, because a number of you here this morning would have been there then, but you probably don't remember much of what I said. But it's interesting to me. I was doing a few calculations here this morning. I guess I kind of get taken up with that sometimes. In fact, I did this before preaching this at home here several weeks ago. If my calculations were correct, and I just had to go back and see who was at Tangent 25 years ago, there were approximately, I think, 77 youth and children in Sunday school at that time. And so then I asked the superintendents, I said, give me a tally for today. And that was kind of interesting. I'm not going to necessarily go into that. But of those 77, there's a number of them that moved to this community. And of those who were youth and down to preschool at that time that are living in this community today, if I calculated correctly, there are 35 children that have been born to this group of eight that would have been there then. Now, I'm talking quite a bit about Brother Clayton's family, Brother Danny's family, and my own. And so just to get the picture clear, I called them this morning just to see how many grandchildren we're looking at. But in these three families, there were no grandchildren 25 years ago. But in these three families today, there are 85. Now my question is, does a crown endure to every generation? Now we're talking of one generation and another and now a third. Okay, so with that background, maybe you can follow where I'm going from here. And so the greatest part of the responsibility of whether the crown endures to another generation is the present generation, the generation that is here and now. And each generation moves on, and time does not stand still, and one generation fulfills their time and moves off the scene, and another generation comes and takes its place. And it's ever been that way from the beginning of time. If you want to turn to Ecclesiastes, I find interesting some things here in the first chapter of Ecclesiastes. I'd like to read verses 4-9 in chapter 1 of Ecclesiastes. Verse 4. One generation passeth away, and another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever. The sun also ariseth, and the sun goeth down, and hasteth to his place where he arose. The wind goeth toward the south, and turneth about unto the north. It whirleth about continually. And the wind returneth again, according to his circuits. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be. And that which is done is that which shall be done. And there is no new thing under the sun. And so it says here that one generation passes away and another generation comes. And then the wise man here talks about the natural cycles in this world. He says the sun comes up in the morning, and then it hurries to go down in the evening so that it can come back up in the morning. And it has ever been that way since the day of creation. And then it goes on and talks about the wind. We can't see the wind, but there was some wind there yesterday, but it says that the wind goes in a circle. It will, see, what does it say here? It goes toward the south, and then it turns about and comes to the north, and around the wind goes. And then it talks about water, and we're glad for the rain that came today, but you know, the water comes down, and it goes into the streams, it goes into the rivers, and it flows into the sea, and then the water from the sea goes up into the clouds and comes back and waters the earth again, and it's a continual cycle. It has always been amazing to me that the scientists say that there will never be one additional drop of water than what there is now, nor will there ever be one less. It's the same. It's a continual cycle. The root word that is this translated generation has a thought of to move in a circle. And so we have the sun that moves in a circle. We have the wind that moves in a circle. We have the water that moves in a circle. And we have people that move in a circle. We have generation after generation. And so the question that concerns us this morning is not so much whether there will be another generation. It depends whether the Lord comes again now. But the question is, will the next generation be found in the way of righteousness? Can there be a dynasty of Christians? And there again, the answer is no. Every generation needs to make their own choice as to the belief and the practice of their life. And so as I look at the children that God has so graciously entrusted into our care in our homes and in our churches, I'm burdened that the crown succeeds to following generations. And you know, as I see younger ones who have given their heart to the Lord and have testified of their desire to serve Him, then my heart is filled with hope for the future. And you know, when there are great-grandchildren that are serving the Lord, great-grandchildren of those passing off the scene, I might say, serving the Lord, then it really blesses my heart. You know, young people, 25 years seems like a long time down the road. And but you know, if time continues and you remain faithful to you, someday is going to be given the responsibility to continue on in the church. And it became somewhat real to me when I thought about it. That 25 years ago, when I preached on this subject, there was a 16-year-old youth in the youth class that is today our bishop. There was an 11-year-old fellow in the intermediate class that is now one of our ministers. So time moves on. The cycles continue. All right. I'd like to read now also from chapter 2 in Ecclesiastes, chapter 2, verses 18 and 19. It says, "Yea, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. And who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? Yet shall he have rule over all my labor, wherein I've labored, and when I've showed myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity." Solomon said, I've done a lot of things in this life. I've built houses. I have well landscaped grounds around my place. He had done a lot of things, planted orchards and whatnot. And he says, but I'm going to go off the scene, and somebody's going to follow me, and somebody's going to, you might say, inherit or whatever, take charge of the things that I have put a lot of effort and energy into. And I don't know if that person's going to be wise or if they're going to be foolish. And, you know, I've thought about that different times. And some of the things that we spend so much time laboring for the things of this world, knowing that someday we have to give it all up. It won't, we won't obviously be able to take it with us. And we don't know whether the person that follows us is going to see the value in the things that we've put so much time and effort into. Now, that's the material. But, you know, we also now have the spiritual side of that. We have church building. We have a lot of effort that goes into building a church that hopefully is following the way of the Lord and pleasing to the Lord. And, you know, I've been involved in leading the church for a number of years. It won't be too many years, and I'll lay that down. Somebody else will take on, and I look forward to that day, actually. But do I know? I don't know whether that person is going to be wise or not. And so the same thing is true here at Pine Grove. You have your leaders. We appreciate them. They're giving direction here. But it says, I hated my labor because I should leave it to another that's going to be after me. And who knows whether he's going to be a wise man or a fool. And so that's a challenge. Is the crown going to endure to every generation? Are we going to be wise or are we going to be fools? You know, it doesn't take long to discard what has been held as scriptural practices and what's important. And you know, I'm amazed again and again at those that I knew somewhat in my younger years, how they've changed their practices. And some of those practices are unscriptural. It's been most interesting to me to go to my daughter Gina's store in Albany. And I'm in and out of there a fair amount. And again, I run into maybe some relative that I haven't seen for some time. Have a lot of relatives around Albany. I run into former schoolmates. I graduated from the high school there in Albany. I run into former classmates and friends of my older siblings. And here, several weeks ago, I was there and I was eating lunch, and there were a couple ladies come in, and I knew the one. The other one looked a little bit familiar, but I couldn't place her. And so then the one that I knew says, do you know who this is? And I said, well, I can't really say. Can you tell me who it is? So she told me, yes, I remember you now. And then she just said, well, kind of chuckled. She said, well, I guess I look a little different. Well, I do too. I've got gray hair. But I don't think that's what she was referring to. She did look a little different. And so we see this type of thing happening again and again. And so when I see these things, I feel that we need to take diligent effort to preserve and to not only preserve but to multiply what has been begun. Does the crown endure to every generation? All right. That's the thought of the generation. Now let's think a little bit about the crown. In the setting here in Proverbs, I think that the crown is probably speaking of royal lineage. You know, and that, another word for that is a diadem. As we speak of dynasties that came and went in Israel and in the kingdom of Judah, and they finally crumbled because of sin and apostasy. We see that their kingdoms are not forever. Does the crown endure? No, it did not endure in the kingdom of Israel. It did not endure in the kingdom of Judah, except for the prophecy of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. There it has continued on. In Lamentations chapter 5, verse 16, but before I read that, Lamentations is a prophet Jeremiah that was lamenting because of what had happened to Judah and how they were taken captive. And in the back of my Bible here, my Thompson Bible, it says this. I run into it this morning. I thought it was interesting. It says the Septuagint version, in the Septuagint version, the following introductory words are found, and this is to the book of Lamentations. It says this: "And it came to pass, after Israel was led into captivity, that Jeremiah sat weeping and lamenting, and lamented this lamentation over Jerusalem." And here is part of his lamentation in chapter 5, verse 16. It says, "The crown is fallen from our head. Woe unto us that we have sinned." All right, also in the New Testament, the word crown sometimes speaks of a diadem or royalty, but more often it's used as a wreath or it's a prize. The background is the Greek athletic contests, in which the victor of that contest was crowned with a garland or a wreath. It might have been made of foliage of ivy or oak or myrtle or olive branches, whatever. The wreath itself had no value, but the value was the honor that it symbolized. It symbolized victory. You know, today we might call it a medal or a ribbon. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians 9. 1 Corinthians 9, verses 24 and 25 says this: "Know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth a prize? So run that ye may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible." And here the Apostle Paul was telling the Corinthians, now when there's a race and they run to see who can run the fastest, they run to get the prize. But we are, we're not after that physical prize. We run to obtain the spiritual prize. And so if a crown is going to endure to every generation, it of necessity needs to be involve victory. Not victory in a foot race, but victory over sin. So we are all in a race, and we all must strive for victory to receive the crown. And how well that I run personally, or how well you run personally, to a large extent is going to determine how the next generation runs the race. 1 John 5, 4 says, "For whatsoever is born of God overcometh the world, and this is the victory that overcometh the world, even our faith." And also in 1 Corinthians 15, 57 says, "But thanks be to God, which giveth us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ." And so we are looking for victory in this race. Now let's think a little bit about striving for the crown. How then do we go about to secure the crown that will endure to every generation? Well, I think that probably goes without saying that one of the surest ways is a strong teaching program to teach our children. Joel 1:3 says, "Tell ye your children of it, and let your children tell their children and their children to another generation." And so if I would have that figured out, that includes four generations, two great-grandchildren. Now turn with me to Psalm 78, and we often read this in connection with something like this. Psalm 78, the first 8 verses. I think I'll just read these 8 verses, and then I'd like to make a comment or two. And the psalmist here attributes his learning to the things that his father taught him. Give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from their children, showing to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and his strength and his wonderful works that he hath done. For he established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers, that they should make them known to their children, that the generation to come might know them, even the generation which should be born, who should arise and declare them to their generation, that they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments, and might not be as their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that set not their heart aright and whose spirit was not steadfast with God. Now, in the King James Version here, we don't see the word teach or teaching. It was interesting to me to look in the NIV version. And in verse 1 there, it says, O my people, hear my teaching. O my people, give ear to my law. Also in verse 5, to make them known to their children, it says, to teach their children. And so we believe that teaching is a part of transferring the crown to another generation. Now, parents, you have children, you need to teach them. And I'm sure I don't need to say that. But you know, I think it's a little too easy for us to transfer teaching to Sunday school, to the Christian day school. We appreciate what our children learn there. And I know as I look back, I think maybe I allowed that to take up too much of the teaching that I knew that my children should get. But there's something, you know, we need to teach by example, but we also need to teach by words. I was thinking about this morning. It's been a while since I thought about it. But in the earlier days of my first marriage, and had a couple little tykes around the house there, we lived in an old farmhouse. And in this farmhouse was fairly cold and drafty, and we had an oil stove in the living room that would keep us fairly warm. But if a door was open to, like, the bedroom or somewhere else, it would get kind of cold. And so I just wanted to test this out. I had the theory that if a parent did what they should do, that a child would automatically follow what they see. But that wasn't necessarily so. Because when somebody would go through the door and leave it open, I'd go close it. Somebody go through it again, leave it open, I'd go close it. Didn't make a bit of difference. But when I started saying, now we need to close this door, then it got through. Do you follow the point there? We need to teach. All right. So that is one thing, is strong teaching program. Secondly, in striving for the crown, I believe it is vital that there is support of the church, of the local congregation of which you are a part. I believe for the crown to endure to succeeding generations, we must of necessity embrace the church, her disciplines, her teachings, her customs. And you know, if there's any reservation on your part, on the part of the parent, to support the word of God and support the church, it's going to tell on the next generation. I've seen that again and again. I'm sure you have too. You know, as I observe those who have lost out in following generations, so often you see that it is because there has not been a total support of the congregation of which they have been a part. And, you know, I'm not saying, I don't know what all you might be experiencing. I'm not saying that you might not have concerns and maybe legitimate concerns. But for the sake of the next generation, be a part of a church that you can wholeheartedly support and that your children know. Psalm 145, verse 4 says, one generation shall praise thy works to another and shall declare thy mighty acts. Now, the generation that we're in today has seen a radical change. in so many things, in the religious world and the culture in which we live. But you know, there's been such a change in forms of worship and deviating from scriptural lifestyle to that which we believe is unscriptural. We've seen a great falling away. We've seen the wall of defense against the world crumble and have holes in it. We've seen unconcern. We've seen apathy. And then in the culture in which we live, you know, that's radically changing to the acceptance of divorce and homosexuality and euthanasia and legalization of marijuana and all these, so many things. We need to know where we stand, what we believe, and why we believe it. And we need to stand lest we lose our moorings. And you know, my heart is burdened when I see those who once were faithful in the things of the Lord, but it seems like it's not important anymore. Today, maybe some of those things don't seem of great importance to them. But you know, I think what we need to look here. Let's not just look out there and say, yeah, we're concerned about that. But what about here? You know, are there seeds of change that sprout here in our midst? And I've seen that in our own congregation. I've mentioned it. And I saw it 25 years ago. And I believe we can weather those changes, but they need to be addressed. I'd like to have you turn with me to Psalm 48. And I would ask this morning, are the walls of protection in our midst, are they in place? And this psalm here, it's a psalm that celebrates the security of Zion. It talks about Jerusalem. It talks about the temple that was built on Mount Zion. And how that the people of God would come to that, and the protection and the security that they found in this place. And I believe that's what our churches should be. They should be a city that is set on a hill. They should be a place of protection. They should be a place that we can resort to, a place of safety. Let me read the first three verses. Great is the Lord, and greatly to be praised in the city of our God, in the mountain of his holiness. Beautiful for situation, the joy of the whole earth is Mount Zion on the sides of the north, the city of the great king. God is known in her palaces for a refuge. I don't know what it was like to be a pilgrim in the land of Israel. As they went three times a year as pilgrims, and they would traverse many miles by foot. And they would come close to the city of Jerusalem. And there on the mountaintop would be this gleaming temple of gold. And I suppose there was an awe and a wonder as they looked at that. And I suppose that the psalmist himself just said, great is the Lord. And he's greatly to be praised. In the city of our God and in this mountain of his holiness. And it's beautiful for situation. What was the security of Mount Zion? And what is the security of the church today? I think we find it in verse 3. God is known in her palaces for a refuge. You know, I think sometimes, and I'm not here at all to down church standards. I believe in church standards. I definitely do. But you know, sometimes I think we almost put our safety, that's our safety. As long as we keep that, then we're going to be safe. But that isn't enough. We need to have God in the midst of us. And then let's go to down to verses 12 and 13. And there's a challenge here. It says, walk about Zion. And go round about her and tell the towers thereof, and mark ye well her bulwarks, and consider her palaces, that ye may tell it to the generation following. What do you see in the habitation of God in your midst? Go around. Are there chinks in the wall? Are there holes? Are there places for the enemy to come in? Or Is the defense in place? Mark ye well and consider her palaces. Tell it to the next generation. All right. Need to continue on here. There's just a few hindrances, I think, to the enduring crown. And I would say probably the greatest hindrance, at least in my life, is complacency. Maybe it is in yours as well. You know, just content with things the way they are. We don't need to be concerned. We don't need to take a stand because we have arrived. You know, I feel in many ways the Lord has blessed us, blessed our congregations. But I think we need to be alert to the problem of complacency. You know, God was faithful to Israel, or God was blessed Israel when they were faithful. But his blessing left them when they turned against him. And so just as God may bless us today, it's no sign that it will continue to tomorrow. It's no sign that the crown will endure to future generations. Another hindrance is unconcern. You know, I really don't care what happens. I'll just go along with it. I have my life to live. I have my business. I'm wrapped up in it. I'm wrapped up in my family. There's social life that demands my attention. Life's been good to me. I'm really not concerned about the future. Let the future take care of itself. You know, that was a little bit the idea of Hezekiah when he said, if there's peace in my day, then he would be satisfied. A third hindrance is that of unbelief. You know, as I look back on some of those who were in our congregation 25 years ago, there are some who apparently have succumbed to unbelief. Don't have enough faith to continue on in the battle. Say it's impossible to live the Christian life. Fearful of the victory of the enemy. But you know, we need to go on in confidence, knowing that greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. Then just a few thoughts yet on the rewards of an enduring crown. First of all, I'd like to read from Proverbs 4, verses 7 to 9. Proverbs 4, verses 7 to 9. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore get wisdom, and with all thy getting get understanding. Exalt her, and she shall promote thee. She shall bring thee to honor when thou dost embrace her. She shall give to thine head an ornament of grace. A crown of glory shall she deliver to her. And so if we get wisdom, if we ask God for wisdom, if we understand the ways of God as he reveals them to us, then it gives a crown of glory. It says, she, or wisdom, will give to thine hand an ornament of grace. A crown of glory shall she deliver to thee. A few other verses. James 1:12 said, blessed is a man that endureth temptation. For when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. Proverbs 16:31 says that the hoary head is a crown of glory, if it be found in the way of righteousness. And then Proverbs 17:6 talks about grandchildren. Children's children are the crown of old men, and the glory of children are their fathers. You know, I don't think there's a parent here this morning that's not interested in your child. You know, you make sure they're clothed, that they're fed, they have a place to sleep. You're concerned for their spiritual welfare. And we want them to embrace the same faith that we have embraced. And young people, again this morning, I would like to emphasize that it is not too early. You don't have children yet, but it's not too early for you to think about passing on the crown to the next generation. You know, there's always hope in a new generation. There are lives that are so full of possibilities. But the foundation of hope for the new generation is the faithfulness of the present generation. That's where we find the foundation for hope. 1 Peter 5:4 says, and when the chief shepherd shall appear, ye shall receive a crown of glory that fadeth not away. And I can hardly close without the testimony of the Apostle Paul yet. In 2 Timothy 4, verses 6 to 8, for I am now ready to be offered, And the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Henceforth, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing. The Apostle Paul was looking forward to the crown of righteousness that he said the Lord, the judge, would give him. Revelation 3:11 says, "Behold, I come quickly. Hold fast that which thou hast, that no man take thy crown." And so these are the thoughts that have been on my mind a lot since the passing of my 96-year-old father-in-law and his generation. And as I think of my generation, and as I think of the generation following me and following that, will this crown continue on, or will it stop right here?